Nice shorts theme song.
Nice shorts. Yeah.
Howdy, hey, and welcome to Nice Shorts.
I'm Fu Yang.
And I'm Johnny Niddle.
And this is the show where we interview animators about the shorts they make.
Today we have Casey.
Casey is one half of Animation Wildcard.
And both halves of Catalyst Castle Studios.
Unless you count her cat, Neville.
So welcome to our first two-part interview.
In part one, we'll learn about how she makes Dog at Home with Neville.
And how making that during the pandemic led to starting Animation Wildcard with her friends.
Which also led to making the Hollow Stop Mo podcast.
So come along and meet Casey.
And now on with the show.
Hi, everybody. This is Nice Shorts again. And today we are very honored to have one of the co-founders from Animation Wildcard. In that amazing channel, a lot of people doing projects at home, especially you can see a lot of stop motion thing happening. And we'd love to start to talk about Casey's work because the first episode, she presents her voice in the channel. So how about we talk about what's the name and also inspiration and start with the process.
Well, thanks. Well, hi, Casey. Thanks for that awesome intro, Fu. That was so nice. Yeah. So the short that we're chatting about today is called Stuck at Home with Neville, which I made for the first episode of Animation Wildcard, which was a group that me and a couple friends started early pandemic. So it was kind of wrapped up in, you know, wanting to make something for that and kind of meeting the parameters that we had set, but also, you know, wanting to figure out how to make something from home when it was like early lockdown and we really didn't have a lot of resources. So it was very experimental in that way.
You said a couple of friends. So I know Lex, but were there more people involved at the beginning?
Yeah, at the beginning. So Lex Dupre is a close friend of mine who has since moved to New York, but we still run Animation Wildcard. But we also started with our friends at a studio called Apartment D. So that is Max Lopez, Cami Kwan, and Sean Maloney. And they were also involved in getting us started. And I think at this point now they're more like advisors. And we check in from time to time on like kind of bigger picture things for Wildcard. But at the beginning, they were really helping us, you know, lay the foundation and figure out our systems and help us get Discord off the ground, which is something that we have for contributing animators to help everybody, you know, get their questions answered as they're making shorts, but also keep us all connected and build a little community.
Quick Discord question. Discords or Slacks or whatever, they can go quiet. Where's the balance of when to push as it's nurture and when it just becomes pushing and everyone gets annoyed?
Right. Like, and I think that's something that Lex and I were not familiar with Discord when we started. That was more like something that Apartment D was using a lot. And I'm also like, I'm going to out myself as not being a gamer. Like I've worked on games, but I'm not like a player. And Discord is very much like in the gamer community. So I think when we first started, we didn't set like our default like notification settings and all that to be quieter. So I think a lot of people ended up like muting everything. So I think that is something that can happen. So it was really active at first and then it got quiet because people weren't getting notifications at all. So I think that that's something you can do up front is like structure it so that, you know, people opt in to the channels they want to hear from versus like getting everything. And then we kind of let it be. We encourage people to use it, but we don't, you know, post like prompts. It's usually more active for like the people who are making shorts for that particular round. And we use it more as support. But when it first started, it was really active. And I think part of that, too, was that all the studios were shut down. And, you know, people were on their computers a little bit more during the day, where most of our community, if they're in a studio, like, can't really be on their phone during the day. And then they're kind of tired at night. So it's a little bit of a quieter channel from time to time. But we think it's okay. It's more like there if you need it.
It was there for needing it. When it started, because as the studio shut down, you had a bunch of stop motion animators who went home with no studios. And suddenly you're like, not a lot of animators are not puppet makers. A lot of them are not stage designers. So how did you start working first on your own work to kind of incorporate all the things that you didn't normally have to deal with, as well as help others do that?
Yeah. Okay. So when the studio shut down, it was at first it was everyone. So I mostly work in stop motion. So every stop motion studio shut down. And then there were also 2D shops and 3D shops and kind of everything in between at first. And some of those people were able to figure out working from home for those studios a little bit faster versus stop motion had a lot of scope challenges and because everything is so physical. So it leaned more heavily on the restrictions of live action production. So that's kind of how that happened. But we also knew that like it was really jarring for people to lose their like creative communities that you're checking in with every day. And that can be kind of like nurturing for our friends who were working in these shops. So we wanted to create some structure. So that was the biggest part of it, of Wildcard, was, okay, we have these rounds, we have these episodes, and, you know, we have due dates and things like that, which, you know, once you're at home and working on projects on your own, like, you know, the sky's the limit, and then almost nothing gets done. Like, you do a lot, but it doesn't get finished. So we wanted to kind of help that in that way, like make a box that people could work within and aim for. And if it didn't end up, you know, people didn't make it, it was okay. But the other part of your question. So, having to figure things out. So once you're kind of in the industry and like working at studios, you tend to specialize. And it depends on what shop you're at. Like I've worked at more generalist friendly shops, but they're still like pretty big. And so I've been on the management side for years now and haven't been able to make a lot of my own work and kind of do all the things. So that was, you know, everybody was running into challenges. Like I was using, you know, not film grade LEDs and I was getting banding and made me cry. Like, I was like, I just animated everything and it looked fine. And then I look at the high res images and they're like,
I had no idea about that. Can you tell people who are like me and have no idea that that's even, I would have never in my life thought about that.
I have trouble explaining it, but it has to do with frequency of light, and different types of lights are at different frequencies, and the way that it interfaces with your lens and the capture will make flicker that your eye cannot see, but the camera can.
Like filming your computer screen with the phone camera kind of thing.
Yes, it's very similar.
Because I know that you could do lights that sync two cameras, right? Like you could actually buy them and they match and set. Or is there like a specific, like, I'm guessing a luminescent general like bulb, like filament is not good. So what's the right way to go?
Oh, yeah. First of all, not an expert in lighting. You're usually safe with tungsten bulbs. You just want to make sure they're not going to burn out. And, you know, when they get brighter, they get hotter. So that's kind of the downside of tungsten bulbs, which are more like yellow light, you would think. But it can get hotter. So a lot of people working at home or in small spaces want to use LEDs. They tend to be a little bit more expensive. But you can get cheap ones, and they will cause banding. So you just want to get LED bulbs from a film store. And Fu, you can probably speak to this as well.
From what you're sharing, it just literally made me think of like some of my friends. Yes, they shoot in a garage. The laundry is beside the shooting space, and when it's washing the clothes or heating, and then the lighting just when you shoot it, it's not consistent. So it's usually, my friend just need to do post to make it consistent. So do you think, like, so far what you're shooting at home when you meet that problem is also by try to do some setup during the post-production?
I have a great plugin. It's by Digital Anarchy, and it's called Flicker Free. And it's kind pretty standard. I think it's like $100. It's really great. And like, honestly, most of the time you just like click the button. Cause I used to use GB Deflicker. And that it just, I had a harder time with it. And then this one worked great. I think what you're mentioning with the washing machine, it has to do with your like overall power supply. And for stop motion people working from home, you know, it's really hard to have control over that. Especially like I'm in LA, we're renting. When I shot Stuck at Home with Neville, I was in the garage running extension cords. I didn't have power in the garage from the inside of the house. And it was a million things. But, you know, since then, I've, you know, made the switch to, you know, really trying to focus on making work on my own and in my own space, unless, you know, projects get bigger, which I'm totally open to. But since then, I, you know, convinced the landlord to let me, like, spend a bunch of money and run actual power to this garage that should, you know, be enough, assuming I don't plug in too many things.
That's awesome. Is there, I mean, do you use power conditioners? Like in audio, we, in houses, generally you'll have a whole separate circuit installed for audio only plug-in stuff, and then one for like computers and things, so they're on different circuits. But we also use, like, we use power conditioners on the end to plug everything into. Does that help, or?
It does help, but it's really would come down to testing. Again, this gets into an area that's like very technical, and I'm not as well versed in it. But a lot of studios will have like a more like advanced power setup than like, you know, I have, you know, four circuits and they go to the garage and they're all kind of separate, which is great. But yeah, you can, a lot of times you are plugging things in so that you won't have, you know, your lights blow with power surges and things like that. And
right.
There's things you can do, but it's also like a lot of lights and a lot of power. So you end up needing like a lot of power conditioners. So it can get expensive versus like the flicker free plug-in. Pretty well, and like I'm pretty like comfortable working in After Effects, so I think like I have that as like a toolbox kind of thing.
Yeah, that's a good recommendation for that plugin. I will be to add in the show notes. That's really save a lot of time. About your first episode, Stuck at Home with Neville.
Yes,
I'm curious because it's a how-to video. So yeah, I want to know like, what are you trying to teach in that episode? And also, like, is education always what you interested in? Or this type of video, are you interested in? Or you have other thoughts for creating it for the audience?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. I think it was something where at that point, and I've definitely made a lot of kind of like career shifts since I made this short. I think a lot of people have, just because of COVID and the reflection that has happened for everyone over these past few years. But at the time I was like, okay, I want to be animating from home. I want to be getting clients. Like, what are some areas that I could kind of, you know, make something that shows that I can do this or is an example? So how-to videos are, you know, pretty popular. They usually are like product-based or have like physical objects already. So it's, was something I wanted to do, and I wanted to make it stop motion. and so, yeah, I think with the first one, it was like, okay, I want to make something for Wildcard, but then I also want to make something that functions in my portfolio, but that can also help a business that is probably, you know, really struggling because of the pandemic. So my friend Sam.
So Sam in Portland.
Sam in Portland.
Yeah.
Has a company called Inspire Art, and they host kids' art events. Mm. And this quilling project was their paper craft event project that they host for these kids. And so all the steps were, you know, the steps that they do for their activities. So it was something that I thought, you know, they can use it. And, you know, she's a close friend of mine. We've worked together for a long time. Something that could help them, you know, be in a better position after the pandemic, hopefully. And, you know, something that would benefit me and something that I could make from home. And then I also had thought of it, you know, originally as something that could be a series, just depending on how lockdown went.
Everyone at the studio, it's funny, like when everyone went back and you realized everyone thought it was going to be 2 to 3 weeks maybe. And so like everyone's mugs are just sitting there with like hot cocoa or something still in it and like just stuff on their desks. It's wild.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we hung on till like the last second going into work. So, because we were, you know, mid-shoot, we had just got off stages, we were in post-production on something for the SpongeBob movie. And so, like, we didn't have a lot of crew, and we were mostly digital at that point, so we were just, like, trying to get it done.
As a SpongeBob fan, I thank you for that.
Yeah. Yeah, it was funny. We had like this shot after like Keanu Reeves' face in a tumbleweed. I was like,
yeah, it was like a bush, like the with the lighting inside, and he's.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, I think that was hard for everybody. It was like, I honestly thought it was going to be longer, even than it ended up being, as far as what, you know, when we were going to go back. And that was part of Wildcard. It was like, okay, I need some structure. I need, like, you know, a path forward. Because it was, again, it was like taking it every couple weeks at a time for months. I was like, this is only getting worse. And it was, you know, it's a surprise to, you know, go back to, be told to go back to work by our, basically by our government. Mm. But everything was like way worse than when they told us to go home.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay.
Yeah.
I don't literally die from my art. I know.
Yeah, yeah. So it was a lot of, you know, how do we make this safe for people to go back to work? But then I had also been like, you know, strategizing, like, what if this is 3 months? What if this is 6 months? What if this is 9 months? Like, what am I going to do? I think people with anxiety will relate to that approach to managing.
I don't know. It's good and bad married together. It's like because of the pandemic, Ambition Wildcard rise, and like, you build such a warm and close community. And also because you have your own studio, Catalyst Castle. Yeah, that's your studio. Mm-hmm. It's also like you can speak up more about what you really want to do. So it's a combination. Yes, we stuck at home, but we are able to see more people's their own voice and use those limited resources to create the things they mattered. So.
Yeah, it was an opportunity for a lot of people. I mean, it's, you know, it's even now, like, we're still in it. We're probably going to be in this for a long time of it being a pandemic. Yeah. Johnny.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
yeah, I think initially it just gave people some room to, like, really consider, you know, what was important to them and, you know, how things were going. And then I think being asked to go back and in that kind of an environment and, like, you know, it obviously, like, I grew a lot during this time, I think, with, you know, I'm like, you know, full-fledged behind Catalyst Castle, my own brand, and, you know, I'm still involved with local studios, but a little bit, you know, of a different capacity. I'm not, like, the person managing those spaces. Now I'm managing my own projects, which is great. But, like, I think it's also these choices are based on what we lost. Like, I did lose someone during that time, and you know, they were across the country, so I didn't get to be there. It's, I mean, it wasn't from COVID, but I think a lot of people had to have that experience of, like, I can't be with this person because I can't travel.
Yeah.
And I can't endanger them. And even if I went there, I wouldn't be allowed to be there.
Mm-hmm.
I would just be nearby, you know? And it's like, it's such a challenge. But I think knowing that, you know, even if everything was the way it was, it still would have been like, oh, I have to, like, totally derail this project to travel, to do something that's very important to me. It made me really think about things and how I would love to have the flexibility to be with my family when I need to be with them and all kinds of things like that. So it's like good, but I feel like I need to address that. Not good, but I think people have grown from that, and for many people, they are still struggling. Like, I'm going to the memorial service for this person next week. Like, and this has been, like, you know, so much time, and we just wanted to make sure, you know, if we're going to delay a memorial service, like, make it till it is actually safe versus just when, you know, travel restrictions are lifted and it's still just as unsafe. So.
Mm-hmm.
Long answer again.
Oh, no.
So sorry to hear that, but also thank you for sharing, like, being very honest about what the situation we are in. Yeah, not all the glorious part. There's also, like, life stuff.
Yeah, there's struggle in it, and I think there's, you know, there's challenge in everything that we do, especially as, like, makers. You know, you kind of see the final product, and it looks, you know, the way it looks, and it's done, and that's great, you know, but a lot of what doesn't get seen and talked about is, you know, the light flicker that made me insane on this project. And, but now, like, you know, I'm not going to have that problem again because I know better than to use that light.
You started telling other people how to not have that problem as well. Like, you're working on teaching others to facilitate so others can do the same thing, which is really cool.
Yeah, like, when that came up, like, we asked it, I put it on the Discord, and somebody on our Discord chat was able to help me through it. And it's like, I knew it could happen, but I didn't know why. And even now I have a hard time explaining it.
I know it could happen, but it would never happen to me, right?
Not to me. And there's, you know, a bunch of things. Yeah. Like, in this project, I wanted to do a felted puppet. I'd never done a felted puppet, nor did I have. I had some felting stuff, but I didn't have the right colors. And I couldn't go to the store because there were no stores. So my friend had some felting material, Lex, my friend Lex, who I've already talked about, so I can use her name. she had some of that, and she, like, put it in a bag and, like, waited a day and didn't touch it. And then, like, I went, picked it up, but, like, through the window, you know, because we didn't know.
No,
we didn't know at that point. We didn't know. So
I had all groceries delivered. I get it. We were all curious.
I was super like, oh, I'm not going to, like, I'm like, I can't have other people shop for me. I'm not going to shop for me. So, like, I forget. Even now, I still go grocery shopping Sunday nights at, like, 9 p.m. So it's, like, not crowded.
This is my favorite thing about being self-employed is the downside is my last day off is October 1st. My next day off will be, in 3 weeks. But when I need to go do groceries or anything, I get to go, like, on a Tuesday at, like, 10 a.m. Or if I need any errands I do while humans are in offices. So Lex gave you a bag full of sterilized goodies in a plastic bag that you picked up at a drive-through window.
Oh, yeah. Just like the challenges. Yeah. So then I got that back and I was like, okay, I'm going to like learn to felt. And I also don't have a lot of time. It was just, it was tough. But there was another, you know, another girl in the group. She's an amazing animator and specializes in making her own felted puppets. And that was really helpful because I was able to ask her questions about that. Mm. So it worked out well. And I think it's something where, like, we're all filmmakers, but there's always something new. And you don't want to make a film that you already know how to do everything because I'm challenge driven. Like, I think other people are too. Like, you want to, you know, build off of certain skills with every project. So I think with this one, it was just so experimental. And it was so like the background was yellow because I had that. Like, you know, it was a little bit less like, you know, this is my vision. It was like, this is what I can make and I think this would be fun, so I'm gonna do it.
You also got a cat to sit still at the end, which is like a huge feat in itself.
We really, I say we really struggled because it was just me and the cat. Like, we've been there for a long time. Yeah. I think for me, especially at the time of this short, I was like, oh, I need structure, so I also need to take a class, you know?
Ooh, what'd you take?
So I took a School of Motion class called, I think it's Design for Motion. And those classes are incredibly difficult, but really good. And early on, it was like, okay, this is how we're going to structure this project and like the pre-production side of it. Mm-hmm. And it was a lot less like unruly than it tends to be at studios because there's like a lot of development, but I kind of identify more with like the motion design community and like having, you know, systems and structures, and these projects are smaller, so, you know, you explore ideas a little bit differently. So I kind of stuck with that structure just to see how it worked on one of my own projects, and now I kind of use it all the time. But I usually start with like an outline. So it's like, what is the box of this project? So for Wildcard, it was like, okay, it has, you know, a length requirement. It has, we know who the audience, target audience is, you know, it has to have a title slate. It has to have certain things. So you started with that. And then you would also start with like, if you have a script or know there's going to be voiceover. So you kind of start with that by like building what does it need to fit into. And then I'll do brainstorming, which is, for me, is usually like mind mapping. So I take like the central idea and then break it out and then break that out in more ideas. And then like maybe hopefully have a little bit of time away from it and come back and, you know, go through and like circle the things that stand out and could compose a whole project.
Do you do that by hand or you do that now on your iPad?
I use Mind Mapper.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's free, but you have to pay for it if you want to like export them. So I just screenshot them. They don't get too big for me. So that's a good one. And then from there, I'll do some thumbnailing. So just working on composition and transitions and how things could work. And I'll usually stop there and then go into mood boards. So, mm-hmm. and that's just figuring out like stylistic influences. And sometimes it's like color or, approach. And then once I kind of land on the mood board, I'll come back to the drawings and get more into storyboarding. And then depending mm-hmm. on how that would go, if sometimes with stop motion, you don't need to do a final rendering of like a style mm-hmm. frame if you're doing your own projects. But if you want to do a case study or if you want to do client work, then you probably do need to do a rendering. So that's kind of my process. And then you just have to make it and shoot it.
Do you storyboard in a software, or like do you Storyboard Pro, or do you just do like just little hand drawings on paper, or what do you do?
I usually thumbnail on paper, and then once I have ones that I like, I'll storyboard in Photoshop.
Photoshop, okay.
But Storyboard Pro is great. It's just expensive, so.
It belongs to Harmony.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it again, like Harmony is amazing. Same with Toon Boom and learning to do 2D and Toon Boom. It's just like I got to pick my battles, especially when things become an annual subscription or something like that. I'm still like starting out, so I got to be careful about certain things. Like that. And I don't need it like for these shorts. Like I don't have a bunch of boards. I have a few.
When you're not gonna stay in Toon Boom, you're gonna go do it on a handheld thing on the set. Like you could just, thumbnails, Photoshop are great.
Yeah. And even making an animatic, you could, stay on paper and just scan them in and pull them into, well, most people do Premiere. I would probably do After Effects just because I'm better at it. But
interesting.
Yeah. I'm just better at like the shortcuts. Like I'll drop all my files in and I'll be like, okay, we're going to start off. These were all 2 seconds. And then like, keyframe assistant, and then they all like line up and there's no gaps, and then nice. I can like, it's just,
whatever do works.
It's faster for you.
Yeah. Like,
do it. Yeah.
Yeah. The right software is the one you're using right now. Like that's it. Whatever. Just get it done.
Yeah. And I can use Premiere. I work on way too many shows that I don't have an editor. So I just run the edit. So like, I can do it. It's just like, I like After Effects. And I'm going to pull it into After Effects anyway once I'm done shooting. So it works.
Yeah.
So you have your animatic timed out. What's your next step?
You have, audio, and it's going to be important. You'll do a rough audio, especially if it affects your timing of the animation. If you have voiceover, it would help to get the final voiceover for your dialogue before you're animating versus having to dub to existing animation, which it shouldn't happen in that order, but
no.
It happens all the time. It happens all the time. not for me, but at studios I work at, it happens all the time.
There's very expensive software that's required when that is the order of operations. You're like, we got to make this fit and record it wild. Oh, and it's a nightmare. But you did do audio. You did narrate. It was your voice.
Mm-hmm. No, it's embarrassing. It is. But I had no other people. I could have made my roommate do it, and she... I didn't ask her to do it, or I could have had the cat do it. So that's what happens when it's a pandemic.
But so that's genius.
It worked out okay. I mean, I hope. I don't love that part of it, but it worked fine. And I had, my little mic, and I had made a little sound tent, and you make it happen.
Yeah. If it keeps bugging you, you can pull out your voice, put in meows, and add subtitles.
Oh, yeah. I could. It's also something where, like, it's it's done, mm-hmm. and that's fine, And I think that's pretty much by the time you finish a project, you are better for it, and you probably see a million places where you could have fixed it. But I think part of the process is like it, this film had to be made in 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. part of that time was getting materials and like all the challenges that went into it. So I think it's like a little time capsule.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a huge part of the deadline. One, helps you finish, but two is like, because like right now, I know I have to have a certain amount done by Friday. So I know like I can, what I can do. And then the whole time my brain's going to keep thinking about what I could have done, what else it could be, how I could have made it better. And you learn so much by just being stuck on the path you are on, no matter what. Like, you had to make decisions, you get them done, you finish a project, it has to be good. But you learn so much just thinking what you could have done.
Yeah, that's the challenge of it. And I think, like, that's why in schools they have you make a film, even though, like, there's no way you're going to be great at all the steps in the process. Like, there's too much that goes into it. That's why these projects tend to be made by teams. You can be, you know, fair at a lot of them and good at a few and great at a few, you know, and, you know, play to your strengths. But the challenge of it is all the steps.
Mm-hmm.
That go into
mm-hmm.
it, and then you work on getting better at the other steps.
Yeah. I mean, finishing is, that's how you learn. Just make and finish and move on and then do again. And you have basically created an entire community for that, which is amazing. Back to your short with Neville. So you recorded your audio. Did you just record at home with like the mic that's in front of you?
I borrowed this model of mic from a friend of mine who's a story artist and has to record a lot of scratch.
Okay.
That's what I did. Okay. I was like trying to remember. Yeah, I borrowed from everybody.
It didn't sound bad at all. Like, I mean, I know hearing your own voice is always fun, but like, it sounds good.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I need, especially for like voice recording, like if I was recording fully, I think I would need something different, or recording you know, musical instruments, it would be a little bit different. But you know, I have a Blue Yeti microphone. I think it was about $100, and it's been, you know, really helpful to have since then. But yeah, for the first project, I just borrowed one. I think I tried getting a cheaper mic after that, and it was like a lapel mic that I could plug in my phone. I forget. I feel like it was like broken or something, and I just returned it. And I was like, just get the one you want. Like,
there's a lot of leeway with vocal recording because people are used to hearing voices in so many different capacities of like shitty on a phone. Like, so there's a lot of leeway with that. But you're right. Everything else got to sound good.
Yeah, yeah. You can get away with certain things. For, you know, for this, I wasn't recording my own audio. I was, you know, sourcing it from a library, which also takes a long time because you have to listen to everything.
Yeah.
What did you use for the sound? So did you buy libraries or did you use access an online one?
I think I purchased just the track.
Okay.
Just the track. And then I did free, like, little sounds.
Or like freesound.org or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Just for the little ones. Because once I had an audio bed, there was a lot more leeway in like the quality of those.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're not hearing them on their own. So I just kind of nested them within there. I forget where I got the audio the bed from, but it is in the credits.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
So we'll put a link to it and people can watch and find out for themselves. It's a surprise. So you have your audio, you have your animatics, you have your yellow background. You've already felted the arms?
No, I made them for this project. So I think I had a day to make the arms. And that was, you know, you do what you can. I think I would have done it differently if I had like certain other things, but I had some armature wire or aluminum wire, and I had some JV Quick, and I had some square stock, so I made the armature. And then I think I padded it. I had some foam, like furniture upholstery foam.
Okay.
So I'd use that to build it up, and then I just cut it down with scissors. Yeah, which a lot of people felting would be like, it should be felt on the inside, but I was like, there's wire in here, I'm gonna break these needles if I don't, like, it worked for me and it was fast, and it didn't have to, like, obviously this is a puppet that didn't need to last that long, so I had some freedom there. And as far as I based it in white felt as well, which helped with the felting adhering faster. And that's probably, like, some people would be like, no, I'm a purist about felting, and you have to use loose wool as the base. I didn't have time. So I felt it the outside.
It looked great. People can be so people-y. Don't worry about them. It looks great.
Well, it's like I recognize that there are right ways to do things. I just feel like I have to say, but it's also like, you got to do what you got to do to get things done.
Yeah, it works for the project and for the deadline, like everything. So it's okay.
Yeah.
You're not like the Felting Olympics or anything. It's just you're making a stop motion short.
Yeah, yeah. You only need to build what you're going to see. So
yeah. So what's next?
You know, it's just strategy. You just kind of have to shoot it. For me, I'll usually, when I'm deciding on any production what to shoot first, it's like you want to shoot, you know, the shots that tell you the most information so that you can solve all the problems, and then it's replicating over other shots. But you also want to give yourself, sometimes just getting that first shot going is so difficult. So you want to cut. Sometimes I'll give my team or me, give me like an easy one, you know, and then you start the rhythm. So it's finding the balance of, do we start with something that you tackle the whole world and you have like this bigger environment shot, which is not, don't really have those in Stuck at Home with Neville. But, or are you doing something that, you know, it does answer some of those questions, but it also gets your shooting pace going and gets you in that work mode versus the fabrication and the pre-production mode.
That's fascinating. It's like music. Yeah. You give them like an easy piece to warm up to record the first one, and then you go right into the hard stuff to get out of the way so they're not tired. That's so cool.
And then the rest of it is easier. So I think for Stuck at Home with Neville, I did the tabletop shooting back first, because for me, I had more struggles with like gravity and the gear that I had, because I didn't have a lot of like winders and things for rigging. So those ones were the hardest and the most complex as far as character animation. So I started with those ones, and then I think I did the down shooter one second, and then I did the live action last.
So this was something, the first short you've made at home since actually like being professional. So how do you budget time for 2 weeks, have so many unknowns still?
Again, you're like, oh, personal project. And I'm like, oh, it's just like a studio project. You budget in your contingency. So the end of your amount of time is not the end of the project, you know? So you end the project before you're out of time.
Right.
As far as how you schedule it. And then things go wrong. And then you use some of your extra time. So I think that that's where it comes from. So if I'm planning a project and it doesn't fit before I've even started and run into things that might take more time than I think they will, then it's not the project for me or for this time, you know? So it's making those changes earlier so that it's possible, like I'm set up to succeed, even if there will be challenges, versus starting with an impossible task. And then you just feel like crap the whole time. Like it's not fun anymore.
If everything has to go perfect for it to fit, it's absolutely
fucked.
It's not
going to fit. Yeah.
Catalyst Castle. I'm curious where you got the name from.
Catalyst Castle?
Yeah.
You know, it definitely evolved over time. But Catalyst had always been something that, like, it stuck with me since, like, high school. And it had to do with, you know, creating change but remaining, like, whole and intact. And it relates more to the, like, enzyme root of that word. And then you know, I had thought of all these other words that I felt like represented me and, you know, where I wanted to go, and kind of just thought about mashing them all together. And I think, you know, where I landed on was kind of building this place where I could exist, you know, and hopefully take with me wherever I go. So that's kind of where the castle came in. And it's also like I do have like kind of like a whimsical quality to the like kind of work I like to do.
Yeah.
So. I think that's how it related. And then a lot of it was also strategic. So it was like, okay, what domains are available? What's, you know, what's new, what's different. I also wanted something that felt a little bit feminine, just because there are so few studios that, are run by women, especially in stop motion. So, you know, there were a lot of things that went into it, but it was also, you know, wanting it to be unique and you know, a vehicle and something that wasn't going to be trademarked or, you know, a clean slate. Yeah. So you have to get a little bit creative, especially nowadays. There's lots of businesses out there.
Yeah, I hope the audience can all check out Casey's website, Catalyst Castle, because I enjoy in your website, you also offer how do you create the shirts or how do you do some projects such as the GIF. And yeah, and also you offer like free resources for people if they want to know like what's the difference you do stop motion, the production timeline, like how do you consider it and think about it?
Thank Why you. Do you hate 2D so much?
Me?
Yeah.
I'm kidding.
I learned 2D. I had like a fine art background and I had a sculpture background. And for me, tactile work, it was so much more intuitive. So I think it was a natural progression in that way. But I do incorporate 2D and I do incorporate live action. And not the as cat. Much 3D just because it's like...
The cat.
Yeah, the cat. Yeah. Mm-hmm. but I, you know, I've worked on, I do a lot of like puppetry shoots as well. Not through Catalyst Castle, but just in general. I do hate 2D, but it's also like, I learned to animate in Toon Boom and then on paper, which now I don't have Toon Boom, you know, it becomes like a barrier. So then, but now I got an iPad, so I want to integrate it more, but now I have to like learn another program. So like I can't do it. It's just like, it's, there's like a barrier there. So I have to put in some time up front before I can integrate it more.
That's so cool though.
And then the website. Yes. Thank you, Fu. That's really nice. I put too much time into the website, but I do try and especially with the projects that I'm doing more on my own or have a little bit more control over the process of, I've been trying to keep in mind that I want to feature them as like case studies. And this is, you know, what my process is for a potential client so they could understand and have something to look at to see that, you know, these are the steps and this is what it looks like. Obviously, sometimes it's not as tidy as it looks on the website, but yeah. Well, thank you for noticing that. And then with the resources, I definitely want to be adding more of them.
Yay! Okay.
yeah. So resources, yeah. I mean, I want to be adding them to the website. One, because I'm an educator. So I teach classes in an animation program called the College for Creative Studies, which is actually where I went to school. So I'm teaching at a college in Detroit right now. And I previously taught at the Laguna College of Art and Design. So, I mean, I think education is like super into it. I want to make it more accessible, especially in like a niche medium like stop motion. And, you know, even when you go to like a 4-year animation program, stop motion is usually like a couple classes maybe. So you still have to like find information on your own. And it's a lot of like, you know, you just do it and then you learn something, then you do it again, you learn something else. So I wanted to, you know, see what I can do to help empower more people and make, hopefully, and this is like, you know, aims of Wildcard too, is make the medium more accessible to new people and invite more new people in, because there are these barriers to entry to stop motion and to animation. And it's very like male, white, affluent background. So it's like, we need to do more to change this. So I'm, you know, trying to do what I can do. and you know, these are big problems and I'm one person, but I think with addressing these issues, it's like, you know, you take a social justice approach. Like what do you have influence over in your life versus trying to fix everything? You know, I have influence over this niche, over these studios that I work at, over what I'm putting out there. So I'm going to try and affect those things and hopefully it helps. You know?
That's a rad way to look at it. Because like the whole I'm just one person is one thing, but you are one person in, like you said, a niche. Like in the stop motion community, you are a percentage, like a decent percentage of the community, which is really cool. Like you have influence there.
It's hard to feel like you're doing enough ever about these things, you know, feeling like you couldn't do enough or you were never doing enough. But then it's also, you know, you have to find a way to live with these issues and to try and make things better in a way that you can. So yeah, I mean, the idea of like, find your lane is not my idea. You know, I listen to some people who are very active in those spaces. There's a good podcast called Sunstorm. I haven't listened to some of the recent ones, but I'm sure it's still good.
You're always like, fingers crossed. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think we all have like a sphere of influence and maybe it's a couple people or, you know, I work in mid-level management at other studios. So, it, you know, you try to make things better where you are with the range that you have. But yeah, I mean, also with the resources, Lex and I have been working on a podcast called Hello Stop Mos. And that's like, you know, educational series for newcomers to stop motion. And then also with the resources, it's kind of like has an entrepreneurial aspect too, in that, you know, Instagram and Facebook recently shut down and, you know, everybody lost their audience for 5 hours or something. It's like you need to be building your email list. And again, it's like, I don't have a huge email list, but it's like, I know it's important. So, you know, you offer these things that are of value to people, but you ask them for their email so they can get more of these things from you. And hopefully, you know, maybe eventually I'll have some kind of offering that is able to financially support me and also help them. So we'll see. But yeah. I think for now, it's just, you know, being able to keep in touch with your audience without having to engage with social media platforms that you might not always agree with.
Yeah. Do you already have the website or like anything set up for Hello Stop Mo? Do you already have those resources mapped out to where they will be so people can find them?
They will be hosted on the Animation Wildcard website, which is just animationwildcard.com. Hmm. And we know what the resources that go along with each episode are going to be, but it's also like, this is another like entrepreneurial thing, but it's like,
yeah,
you can hinder yourself by trying to be ready all the time and trying to prepare and have everything done before you start. And for us, it was like, we know what these resources are going to be. We know the content is going to be in them. We haven't made them yet. But if we record the podcast and say we're going to have them, we will make them.
I like it.
And it's like this like just-in-time thing. It's more efficient. And it's also like, I think a lot of us try and fill the amount of time that we have with our tasks so then they can grow and become bigger than they need to be. Versus like, if I only had 2 hours to make this, it would be done. It would be great. It would be fine. And it would still be a value to other people. Versus if I was like, okay, today I'm going to make this list for people, you know? So that's just that approach.
I got to answer. So the question from the last guest, which project are you the most proud of so far and why? Any project in general doesn't have to be animation.
Oh, God. I think Wildcard is the thing I'm the most proud of. Animation Wildcard. I feel like I should use the full name when I say that. Just because it's been, you know, there's not always areas of your life where you get to have a lot of influence. And that's one of the places that I feel like has been a vehicle for me and Lex to do a lot of the things that we really care about. And we have the most freedom to do it there. So, and it's grown in such a way that was so surprising for us. And so it's reached a lot of people in a helpful way. So I think that's definitely the thing I'm most proud of.
Mm-hmm. Very good thing to be proud of. It's something absolutely should be proud of. It's awesome as shit.
No, thanks.